Mr. Boxall, Real 7. We got to the point, you were in Peninsula Barracks at Haifa. You're not quite sure when you got there. But you then came home on leave. Now, that was June 46.
That was June 46, came home on leave.
Was that just a normal leave?
That was a 28-day leave. I came home to do a course. But the boat was late getting in, so I only did one day of the course. It was a week's course we were on. So I came home, I got there, I think, on the Wednesday afternoon, so I did the Thursday. The course broke up on the Friday, and then I was on leave for a month.
For a whole month?
For a month, yeah.
And were you meant to go back, or did you go back?
I did go back, yeah, but in that month I was married.
And what made you decide to get married then?
Got engaged before I went out to India after coming back from Germany. I proposed and we got engaged. And then I was coming home. I knew I was coming home on this course, and I was going to have a month's leave. So I said to my future wife, right, no, we'll get married then.
It was just good timing.
We were married 30th of June 1946.
And what happened next then?
Had a month's leave, went back to Palestine, went back up to Haifa. We then moved up north of the Sea of Galilee into another tented camp.
Do you know its name?
No. It was just a camp. And after 2 or 3 months, I applied to go back to my parent unit, which was the Royal Norfolk Regiment.
Now, why did you do that after all that time? Because that's a long... I mean, you'd been in the parachute regiment longer than the other one, or was it?
Well, mainly because I thought, you know, I could go back to the battalion, get myself sorted out. Because that was my parent unit anyway. I wasn't... then you weren't a member of the parachute regiment. You were a member of the Royal Norfolk Regiment, seconded to the parachute regiment. So I applied to go back to my parent unit.
Where was this?
I got a bit fed up. They worked out that I was time expired on 3 years overseas tour, because my time when I was in hospital counted as time on active service. So that made the 3 years was up. And they sent a signal came to the war officer. I was to be posted home straight away because I was well overdue my 3 years service abroad. So I came home, I think it was about September or October in 1946. And came home, had a month's leave, and was posted to the depot of the parachute regiment.
The parachute?
Yeah. Where I was then...
Was that at...
That was at Aldershot. And...
Now, how did you feel about this?
Well, I didn't... All I wanted to do was get home to live with my wife for a little while, I think. I wasn't particularly worried about going back to the Royal Norfolk Regiment. It was just a ruse, really, to get myself out of Palestine, one way or the other.
You had enough of Palestine.
Well, yeah. I hadn't had a Christmas at home, not actually at home, since 1939 was the last Christmas I had at home. And I didn't have another one until 1947, and that was at my wife's home. So I thought I'd done my share, and it was about time I had a bit of a break. But when I got home, they posted me at the depot of the parachute regiment, and there, once again, I was lumbered into playing hockey for all and sundry.
And then, now, what were you doing? You were company sergeant major. Had you dropped a rank at all?
No, I was still company sergeant major.
And what role were you playing in the depot?
I didn't do anything there very much because within being there for a fortnight or 3 weeks, I was posted to the training battalion that was in Aldershot at the same time. So I was moved down there to be company sergeant major of one of the training companies.
And the training battalion was just called the training battalion?
Yeah, and that was... they were then taking people, directing from civvy life into the parachute regiment. They hadn't done that before. They'd always taken people from regiments. But then, about that time, they started having recruits into the parachute regiment and became a regiment of its own.
Now, what did you think of that change in recruitment policy?
Well, it was all right because you got to, you trained the people that you wanted. You see, I think some of the people we got from battalions, they were people they wanted to get rid of rather than people they didn't send their best there if they could help it. But with that recruitment policy, you had a choice of the recruits that you had, that you got.
And what were your sort of a typical duties for the training battalion?
Well, once again, drill, discipline, whatever was needed.
You were very young still.
Oh, yeah.
Did you get any trouble with people?
No.
You know, some of the older soldiers?
Oh, no.
So how long were you with the training battalion?
About 6 months, I suppose.
So was from that, about November through to about May?
May, yeah. But I then decided that enough was enough and I'd go back to my parent regiment.
And you really meant it this time?
Oh, yeah, I applied for a posting and I was posted back to Britannia Barracks.
And was there any sort of farewell for you?
No. I went back to Britannia Barracks, knocked about there because that was only just a sort of holding unit then. And eventually in September, October.
So you were at Britannia Barracks quite a while.
Yeah, 47. Oh no, 48. September 48.
I have just noticed a bit of an anomaly. You, because it looked before that you came home in 46, but in actual fact, you were out in Palestine after you got married for another year.
Yeah.
But nothing happened. We've just been through
No, just normal training and.
Routine.
Yeah, routine.
So you came back in October 47, so that's why we're now through to sort of September 1948 is when you rejoined the North.
Well, my first son was born in September 48,
and
I rejoined the Norfolks just after he was born.
You mean the regiment, because you were Britannia Barracks before, weren't you?
Britannia Barracks. And then just after he was born in September, I was posted to a battalion, which was in Berlin.
Now, when you went out to join the first battalion in Berlin, what did you feel about the posting and going back to them after all the years?
Well, I suppose I looked forward to it because it was like going back to your family. I mean, the Royal Norfolk Regiment always sort of tried to cultivate the family feeling for everybody. I knew quite a lot of the people there. I mean, most of the senior ranks I knew anyway. They were with me they were with the battalion when we were in India before the war. So I knew quite a few of them. They weren't then senior ranks when I knew them, but I knew them when we got back. It was like sort of coming home, really.
Were there any particular characters in the regiment that you remember?
Winky Fitt.
He was still there.
Yeah, he was there. He was a company sergeant major.
How was he as a company sergeant major? Because, I mean, he didn't have quite the same views on drink as you did, perhaps.
No, he didn't. Winky liked his drink, liked his pint.
Did it affect him?
I don't know. I don't... I don't think it's politic to comment on people drinking.
Fair enough. Fair enough, absolutely.
I think.
Do you think he was a good company sergeant?
Oh, yeah, he was a good company sergeant major, yeah. Yeah. And he eventually became regimental sergeant major of the depot. There were other people that I knew. A lot of the band, some of the people in the band who were band boys and bandsmen when I was in the band, were still there.
As senior NCOs?
So, well, no, someone was still a bandsman. I mean, one or two of them that I knew were in the band when they were bandsmen when I was in the band in India before the war. They were still bandsmen when I went back in 1948. But that was their choice, I suppose.
And any other? What about the officers?
Some of the officers were. I still knew. W01 Gilchrist, he was a sergeant then, Sergeant Gilchrist, DCM, was there.
He became
in
RSM,
Berlin.
Didn't he?
What?
He became
RSM.
What was
yeah.
he like then as a sergeant?
No comment.
Fair enough.
W02 Howard, he was RQMS, he was a colour sergeant when he came back, when I went back. Major Gibbons, he was my company commander.
What was he like?
He's been a prisoner of war during the war, and I'll comment on him when we get to Korea.
Okay.
W02 Bell, Dinger Bell as we called him, he was one who was in the battalion before the war with us. Fit, as I said. Tim Chatting wasn't in the battalion before the war, but he joined the battalion sometime after, at the end of the war, from, I think, the Beds and Hearts, I'm not sure.
I mean, he became RSM as well.
He became an RSM,
what was he
yeah.
like?
Yeah, he was all right, he was a decent bloke. But the officers, Major Cooper Key, who was a second lieutenant who took us out to India in 1939, when I went back to the battalion, he was a major commanding B Company, and it was B Company that I joined.
And how had he changed, you know, from a young second lieutenant to now to...
He was still as mad as he ever was, but he was a nice bloke, and he's... I've seen him lately, and he always comes and shake hands. And in fact, I was at something last year, and he made a special point of coming to see me.
And what was he like as a major? I mean, did you work with him?
He was all right. He was a pre-war officer, and he knew what he was talking about. He'd won an MC in. During the war, and he was a good officer.
What made a good officer for you? I mean, you've said what
a
makes
good,
you...
A good officer was someone, once again, who looked after his troops. I always maintain that a good commander, a good officer, whether he be an officer, a warrant officer, or a sergeant, his main job is to look after his troops, and a good officer looks after his troops rather than look after himself.
What about the sort of tactical skills they need? Do you know what I
well,
mean?
Well, yes, there? Yeah, that, they sort of develop them. Once again, it depends a lot on their senior NCOs that they get as young officers, who then guide them in the right way to do things. You don't tell them what to do, but you try to suggest that the best way to do it would be this way, rather than go bull-headed at it and make a muck-up of it.
And who was the colonel?
Well, the colonel who took us to Korea was...
Oliver. We'll come back to him when we get to the Korea.
Yeah.
So, now, where were the regiment? They were in Berlin.
They were in Berlin, yeah. In
which barracks? Was Spandau or...?
I'm not sure. I think it was Spandau barracks.
They were barracks,
though? Yeah, they were proper barracks. Yeah.
Were the German barracks like compared to what you were used to?
They didn't come up to the standard of the post-war Sandhurst blocks. or the post First World War Sandhurst blocks.
What way were they lacking?
Well, they were a bit crude in, I mean, the floors were just slabs of stone or concrete. They were a bit drab, they were a bit miserable, if I might say that.
And how did you settle down into big company as a CSM?
Oh, I settled down quite easily, and then, as I say, I was known of or knew a few people in the battalion, and of course, as soon as I got there, I was roped into playing hockey. So I was very soon settled down.
And what would you say the range of duties that you had to do in B Company were? I mean, what was B Company doing?
Well, it depended what you were doing. Whether you were doing garrison duties, like putting the guard on the prison that the German admiral was in.
So it was Spandau?
Yeah.
What would that be like? Tell me what the guard duty, you know,
I didn't actually go on that one.
Okay.
But there were guards at different places. And it was the same as any guard anywhere, that you had sentries on duty and you stood out there with your they stood out there with their rifles and in sentry boxes or did little patrols.
Did you have the stick man and all that sort of
thing? Oh, yes, yeah. What you did was when you detailed a guard, if it was a guard of six, you detailed seven. And then the best one who was best dressed and best presented was made the stick man, and he then was falling out and went round with all the officers, and they called him the stick man.
Did they really try to?
Oh yes, yeah. There was a very great competition to be stick man, because it meant you got away with doing the guard. You didn't have to. It was counted as having done the guard, but you didn't do it. You were free.
So there's guard duties on the prisons, on the camp, various guards.
And plus firing on the ranges and normal training.
How was the training organised? I mean, was it on the individual platoon?
Well, it was usually on platoon, but on occasions it was company training where the whole company was on. But that was more later when we went to, we're down in zone, and we went up to Senilago and places like that to train.
And had the training moved on at all, or was it still much the same?
It was very much the same. I mean, they'd learnt their lessons, or what they thought were the lessons of the war.
Which were what?
Well, battle drill, for instance. I mean, before the war, there was no such thing as battle drill, where you went along, got down, crawled into another position and fired. There was a drill laid down, they called it battle drill, and then you learnt to...
Can you explain a bit more about battle drill?
Well, yes, it's a sequence of events that you had to go through. Like, you're fired upon, you get down, and then you crawl to another position, and you don't stick your head up again until you're out of where they expect you to come up. I mean, it was no good falling down and then coming up straight away, because if you did, whoever was firing on you probably got a bead on you there. And so there was a drill laid down, crawl, observe and fire. And so what you had to do, you had to get down, crawl into another position, observe, and then fire.
Any other battle drills? Because there's more to it than that, I think.
And there was various ways of moving across country. I mean, you didn't move across country in little blobs. When you did a route march, you didn't march along in threes like we used to. You marched along either side of the road in sections, well spread out. And perhaps, a company would take 400 or 500 yards of in line to march along a road. It was all things learnt that it was no good being in a little bundle altogether, because that was caught in disaster.
So the trainee was starting to incorporate all
yeah,
this?
Yeah, incorporated whatever lessons had been learnt during the war.
Now, how did you get on with the Germans? I know you weren't allowed to mix with them then, but I think...
When we were in Berlin, I didn't have much to do with them. But when we moved down into the zone, in the British zone, we had a woman who used to come in and do the cleaning for us. Because by then, Jean had come out with my son, who was then a baby. And we were in a quarter, well, we were in a house.
And where was it? Whereabouts in British zone were you?
That was we moved to Hoverath, just outside of Düsseldorf. And there, my wife came out with my son, who was about 6 months old then, I suppose. And we lived in a house in Martha-Strasse.
And this was your married accommodation? Was this?
Well, no, it wasn't. It was a German civilian house that had been requisitioned by the forces.
And what was it? What was it like?
It was a nice house. I think there were two or three bedrooms and a living room and a kitchen and garden with trees in it. And
what did the missus think of it?
Oh, she liked it. She liked it quite a lot. That was quite nice. So, and we had a German woman who used to come in and do the cleaning with us and look after Michael if Jean had to go out or anything.
How did you get on with the Germans at that time?
This is where they were all right. Yeah, I never did mix much with them.
Any reason why not?
It's just the fact that I'm one of those funny people who've got no time for them.
Why was that though?
Mainly because of the war. It's the same as the French. We went out of our way to help them and do everything for them, and now they won't give us a trip into their teeth. So I'm afraid I once again, like I was with the Jews, I'm not very keen on them, shall I say.
And, were things settling down in Germany by then?
Yes, it was, it was
like... Had the black market gone, or was it
still? No, you could still operate on the black market if you wanted to.
What was going on with it? I mean, were you part of it, or were you aware of it?
What, of the black market? Oh, no. You were aware of the fact that if you wanted anything, you could get it. A couple of pounds of coffee, a couple of tins of coffee would get you all sorts of things. And I've got my daughter's got it now, a clock that I bought in Berlin for 100 fags and a couple of tins of coffee, I think. And it's still going. It's a good clock. Things had settled down much. They were rebuilding. It was quite, of course, we sort of lived once again in a family atmosphere of the regiment. I mean, things were done for the families, and there was the bus to go to the nappy shopping. And
can you talk a bit more about this family atmosphere that they built up? Because it's quite interesting.
The regimental bus, we had a regimental bus, and that used to be laid on to take the wives down to Nappy in Düsseldorf, or going to Düsseldorf shopping. And they made sure that, everybody was looked after. The MO looked after the families, and if your wife wasn't well, he always was there to look after them, and there was a BMH for them if they were pregnant to be looked after. And
what about the education of your, I think you said it was
education,
a boy.
Yeah, well, he wasn't old enough then for school, but the education was looked after by the secondary school with a boarding school somewhere out in Germany. Fortunately, none of the children, the twice that we were in Germany, were old enough to go to for secondary school.
But it was there.
It was there for children to go to.
Now, how did you see your career as progressing at that time? This is before Korea. You didn't know Korea was coming at the
no,
time.
No,
you'd done very well, but you were young. But how did you want your career to go?
Well, I eventually wanted to get to be a regimental sergeant major. That was my ambition. And when it came round, they said, decided that we've got to get our first class education certificate to keep our rank. So I sat and passed that.
Did you find it difficult?
Not all
that. Did you
have
to study for it first?
Yeah, you had to study for it, all in your own time. We didn't get any time off to do it. It all had to be done in your own time and in the evenings.
What topics did it cover?
English, maths, current affairs. That was the first part. And the second part was voluntary subjects. I think I did history and geography and map reading. But you had to pass all subjects. If you failed one subject, you didn't get anything. But then they found that was a bit too difficult, so they then decided that you could sit it in the two halves. But then they found that was too difficult, so they allowed it to go back to what it was pre-war, where you could sit a subject at a time. But I sat the whole thing, and I passed it. There was only, I think it was about 14 of us sat it in the regiment, and only two of us passed.
And you'd have lost your rank if you hadn't passed, would you?
Eventually it would have done, yeah. Because you had to have, to be a warrant officer, you had to have a first-class education certificate. To be a sergeant, you had to have at least a second-class education certificate to get a substantive rank.
And your ambition was to be an RSM?
Yeah.
You never thought of, you'd done so well so young, you never thought of trying for a commission?
No, not really. Didn't
Why
fancy
not?
It.
Why didn't you fancy it? What was
it? I don't know. I was always, I think I was a bit too rough and ready to be an officer, to be honest with you. If I thought something was wrong, I said so, and I didn't pull any punches. You have to be a bit more diplomatic if you're an officer, I think. So, I always wanted to finish up as an RSM, and eventually I did.